Welcome to Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region. I'm Stella Fong. In this show, we learn how to bake French bread from renowned baker Greg Patton. When my husband Joe Diller turned 60 years old, I gave him baking lessons with Greg. Over a long weekend, we played in Greg and Dorothy Patton's kitchen in Missoula, with a big center island topped with a wood slab smoothed from years of rolling and kneading dough. Greg Patton is an award-winning cookbook author of nearly one dozen books. His book Cooking in America won the 2003 James Beard Award and was an International Association of Culinary Professionals finalist for Best Baking Book. Currently, he is the host of The Food Guys with John Jackson on Montana Public Radio. Greg's French bread recipe comes from the book From Julia Child's Kitchen, A Baker's Odyssey, a celebration of America's rich immigrant heritage, and Montana cooking, highlighting the glorious cooking under the big sky, and New Frontiers in Western Cooking are other books authored by Patton. In her head notes, Julia describes, a fine loaf of French bread has a crackly crust. The bread itself inside the loaf is full of holes, yet has texture and body when you chew it. And above all, good French bread has that wonderful taste of grain, of nature itself, of bread the way you dream it should be. Now with my husband at his side, Greg begins the process of making French bread. The process must be exact, but there are two important pieces of equipment that will ensure successful results.
I think if you're going to be baking, you should have a scale and you should weigh your ingredients.
The second item is a thermometer, as taking the temperature of the room, flour, water, dough, and oven are very important.
All of those are very critical in terms of the quality of the ultimate product that you get.
For certain bread dough recipes, it's a good idea to measure the temperature of the water, the temperature of the flour, the temperature of the room, and then you can adjust the temperature of water depending on the temperature of the flour in the room. And then when the dough is kneaded, and the ideal temperature that a dough should be is 78 degrees, if the room is really warm, then you need to use much colder water.
So let's make French bread the Julia Child way, beginning with the starter.
Okay, so it's basically water and flour and yeast.
Bread making is made up of simple ingredients with simple steps, but one must mix in care and attention. The key parts of Julia Child's recipe for French bread begins with a dough mixture that is kneaded. Then this is followed with the first and second risings. The loaves are then formed, followed with baking. So let's begin. Though the dough is initially kneaded and becomes soft and sticky, Julia recommends kneading by flipping until the dough begins to have body. Greg likes to knead his dough on marble.
Marble, of course, is cooler. And you can say, well, why are you using something cooler, which is going to slow down yeast action? And I'm saying, well, that's exactly the point. I want to slow down yeast action because I want this rise to take a long time so that the flavor of the bread can develop, because all we have is flour, salt, yeast, and water. Mm-hmm. We don't have any other flavor agent, and it's the salt, and then it's going to be the enzymatic action of the yeast working on the flour that is going to develop the flavor.
After kneading in extra flour, Greg and Joe let the dough rest.
So was this a revolutionary recipe then?
This was revolutionary. Out? Yes, it was revolutionary because up until this time, we didn't know how to make an authentic French bread at home. Mm-hmm. And so Julia not only spent, 284 pounds of flour working out the recipe, but she actually went to a French bakery with Raymond Calvel, who was really an expert French bread maker, mm-hmm. and learned firsthand from him, you know, how to shape the bread and get the basic formula for the dough, which is just flour, salt, yeast, and water.
Okay, so but she developed a small batch.
Yes, the small batch. Yeah. She had to figure out, and then to bake it in a home oven, you know, with tiles to manufacturing steam, which was heating up a brick or a metal object and then dropping it into a pan of mm-hmm. cold water that would generate the steam mm-hmm. For the oven. And she had to develop all of that.
Then the dough is allowed to rise. The first and second risings require at least 3.5 hours each. In our case, the rising took place overnight. The next morning, work begins on the dough.
I dislodged the dough that had risen to triple its volume. I put it on this lightly floured surface, and then I kind of just folded it over on itself, and then, you know, in half, and then again in quarters, just to kind of redistribute the yeast cells. And then I put it right back in the bowl, and then we'll let it rise to almost triple in volume again, and then we'll be able to shape the loaves. Okay.
Julia recommends cutting the dough into 3 pieces, but Greg divides the dough in half instead.
So maybe that's what we'll do.
Make two bigger ones
rather than three skinny ones.
Mm-hmm. Now Greg and Joe cut up the dough and weigh the portions.
Dividing the dough in half and then just folding it over itself. This is 16.8.
Mm-hmm.
16.15.
Mm-hmm.
How much difference is that between 0.15 from 0.8? 65? So another 0.3 maybe. I'm deciding that that's enough.
Now the dough gets formed into baguettes, beginning with forming the dough into a triangle.
Let's see, can we just stretch that without having to pat it so much? It's easier if you stretch it.
And then push it.
And because we don't want to get too much air out of it.
Okay.
I'm going to put some more in here and I'll just turn it over. I think that's good.
Okay.
Okay, and then take the top third.
Onto the middle.
Push it down, then take the bottom third and push it up right to the top, and then pinch it together to make a seam. And then turn it so that the seam is facing you.
Okay.
And then we'll make that deep trench, and then we'll take the top half and seal it to the bottom. And you hear the bubbles popping.
Yeah.
Okay, now this is when we want to make sure we have enough flour. And it's pretty much already rolled out, isn't it? I mean, this is our baguette, I think.
Once again, Greg emphasizes how important it is to work at the correct temperature, monitored by a thermometer.
You need to get one of these, a thermopen, it's called. And so this is a room temperature, 69 degrees, but this, I can take the temperature of the dough, I can stick this in, and if we're doing, it's very important when you're doing kneading and things like that, measuring water temperature and flour temperature.
A canvas cloth is used for rolling out pastry dough. Especially if it is well floured, it is a great nonstick surface. In this case, the canvas cloth is pleated, providing long troughs to lay the formed baguettes to rise.
I like to use canvas to let my baguettes rise because you can really rub a lot of flour into the canvas, which acts as kind of like a protective coating so that when you put the really moist dough on it, it won't stick to the canvas.
Mm.
And then, and the way to use the canvas is to, and you can get it at any fabric shop, and then just cut it to, you want a width of about 17 to 18 inches so that they can fit into the standard kind of baking pan, and maybe 24 inches long so that you can make creases in it to hold little troughs, you know, to hold the bread. And then once the bread is shaped, you put one loaf in each trough, dust the loaves with flour, and then cover it with some plastic to prevent it from drying out, and then take a towel, just a regular kitchen towel, and then just cover the pan, and then just set it aside until the bread rises to about triple. And it all depends on the warmth of the kitchen and how much yeast was in the dough and how active that yeast is. It's supposed to take at least an hour and a half.
Now that the baguettes have risen, it is time to bake them. An oven with baking tiles placed in the center rack has been preheated to 450 degrees Fahrenheit. But before the bread goes in, the baguettes are transferred from the canvas to an unmolding board, which can be a large piece of plywood. Then the baguettes are scored with a razor blade to about 1/4 inch deep.
And I'll get my
blade.
My slashing blade. Mm-hmm. This one is light. Put that there.
How old is that blade?
It's a bit old, but...
The slashes into the bread allow for the loaves to expand when they bake. But before the baguettes go in, Greg missed the hot oven as moisture prevents the crust of the bread from drying out too quickly.
So this is water.
Okay.
See, a lot of steam.
Yeah.
So I have the spritz now. And then I can go.
That's all you need. Then we'll wait a minute or two and then we'll do it again.
So you should do it maybe 3 times in 5 minutes.
Okay.
And then you can leave it alone for 5 minutes. Don't open the door for 25 minutes, I mean, total.
Okay, after that.
Right, and I think what I'm going to do, considering that the loaves have gotten really too dark
uh-huh.
on a previous baking, that once I've spritzed it for the third time,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to turn the temperature down to 400.
Okay.
Okay. So I started at 450. I didn't do 500.
Mm-hmm.
Started at 450, and then we'll go down to 400, and we'll check after 25 minutes.
So what does perfectly baked bread sound like? When it comes out of the oven, it crackles, sounding like the snapping of tiny needles of glass. But you must listen carefully, very carefully. Now to my favorite part. Let's cut into the baguette.
I'm going to do this at an angle.
Okay.
And see? See that nice open structure here?
Beautiful.
So it's very crusty. It's a little bit too crusty there. But smell, it's got a great aroma.
I know, you can really get the sourdough.
Yeah, so
flavor.
So I think
it's
this
got
is,
quite a crust on it.
It's really got a great yeah. crust on it. So that's it.
Excellent.
Perhaps what is even more excellent is a slice of fresh bread just out of the oven. Slather it with butter, and life is perfect. A toast to Greg and Julia Child. Bon appétit. Julia Child created and hosted The French Chef, a cooking show produced and broadcasted by WGBH, the public television station in Boston, Massachusetts, from 1963 to 1973. The French Chef was one of the first cooking shows on television. With enthusiasm and exuberance, she shared her knowledge of French cuisine from her culinary training at Le Cordon Bleu in Paris on the show. Then in her lifetime, she wrote nearly 20 books. She brought Bon Appétit to countless many. Welcome back to Flavors Under the Big Sky. I met Greg Patton about 20 years ago, but we got to know each other better when I moved to Montana. Greg is my mentor, who I can proudly call a friend. In this second half, Greg shares how baking came into his life and provides further tips on successful baking.
I started baking, you know, when I was about 11 years old. And the reason I did was because I was watching a television show in San Francisco hosted by this wonderful older woman, Edith Green, who reminded me of my mother's mother, my Iraqi. And my mom had looked through the book, and I thought, I'll bake biscuits, because biscuits looked really easy to do. And so I made a batch of biscuits, and they were a total disaster. They were really tough, and they hardly rose. And And I cried, which is what I did when I had failures as a child. And so my mom suggested that I ask our landlady who lived above us what I might have done wrong, because she was really a good baker. So I went up to Mrs. Brown and I told her my story, and she told me what she thought had happened was that I had over-kneaded the dough. And I didn't really understand what kneading meant, because the word knead, I don't think, ever entered into the recipe description. But what she meant was that I had just handled the dough too much. And so she gave me some pointers, and I made the biscuits again, and then they were totally wonderful. And they looked like the picture, and they were light. And I was hooked. At that point, I just wanted to bake.
Well, and then that led you to, at age 19, to the Pillsbury Baking Competition.
Yes, I was a real fan of the Pillsbury Bake Off. And every year when the booklet of recipes came out, I wanted always to make, you know, the grand prize winner, and then look through the books and see if there was anything else that really interested me. And so at that very young age, I just started doing that. And I thought, you know, I'd like to enter this contest sometime. And so I worked on a bar recipe, a cookie bar. And one of my favorite cookie bar recipes was oatmeal date bar. And I would buy those at a neighborhood bakery. But then I thought, well, you know, I really love apricots. And so I thought, well, what if I made these bars and substituted apricots? But not only substitute apricots, but let's get rid of the oatmeal. And then maybe I could put in coconut and walnuts and create a bar based on, you know, that trio of combinations. And that's what I did. I sent the recipe in, and lo and behold, I became a finalist in the junior division. At the time, there were three categories in the Pillsbury Bake Off. There was the senior division. There was a bride's division of women who had been married for a year or less. And then there was a junior division, and there were 20 of us in the junior division.
And you came in second.
I won second prize. I won $1,000. That was a lot of money in those days.
It is a lot of money, and you can find the recipe in Baking in America in your James Beard Award-winning cookbook.
I've put it into that book, and because it's a favorite recipe of mine. And if any of you out there collect the Pillsbury Bake Off books that come out year to year, I'm in the 10th Bake Off.
That's fantastic. You spoke of Edith Green. Are there other baking culinary heroes that have been, you know, influences and inspirations?
Absolutely. And of course, the first that comes to mind is Julia Child. And I watched Julia just every week, and so, you know, with my wife. And we got married in 1964, and Julia's show started in 1963, and her book, Mastering the Art of French Cooking, came out in 61. I was not introduced to that book until around 1964, and then we were living in San Francisco at the time. Actually, we were living in Berkeley and as graduate students at the University of California, and we would watch Julia every week. And what I did, I used her show as a tutorial, so that I would watch the show, and then I would make what she made that week. And so I was learning by doing what she had done. And then another big hero of mine, or heroine of mine, is Maida Heater, who is the queen of baking, as far as I'm concerned. And her first baking book came out in 1974. And it was Maida Heater's Book of Great Desserts. And I bought that book in 1976. And I made every single recipe in that book. And if there was blogging at that time, there wasn't even an internet at that time. If there was blogging at that time, that's what I would have done. I would have blogged pretty much every week or every few days, you know, a recipe that I had made. And so she's terrific.
Well, and to this day, you still watch even Julia Child's videos.
I do watch her videos, because they're all available on Amazon. It's just a thrill to see those black and white shows again. She has a whole series. There's 202 half-hour videos of her French chef cooking series. Most of them are in black and white. Those are my favorite shows. And then there's a whole series in color as well, which are also well worth watching. But she's hammier in those. She puts on more of a show, and I prefer the black and white, less hammy versions of Julia.
Well, though she's been known to be quite hammy and just taking cooking and baking very lightheartedly.
Well, yes, she's so terrific because she's pretty much a klutz. You know, she's clumsy. And she said if she can do it, anybody can do it. That's why she was such a great model. But she also was such a great model because she's inherently a very interesting person.
Yeah.
And she gave you a lot of confidence just watching her. And she was just very entertaining because of the fact that she had that amazing voice of hers. It turns out she had extra long vocal cords, which gave her that, what kind of quality you would even you would even say she had. But it was those vocal cords of hers that people paid attention to when she spoke. And then also just the way she would work in the kitchen. And she was an expert. If you watched how she would dice and chop and all that, you could see that she really was quite talented.
Yeah, very much so. Mm-hmm. Well, I've been in the kitchen with you for a couple days now, and I've noticed that you have some key pieces of equipment that you use quite often. What are they and why?
Well, first of all, I want to know what you think are my key pieces of equipment.
Well, I think that once we get home, we're going to be buying a scale.
Oh, a scale. Absolutely. And one of the reasons for that is that measuring is not all that precise. And, you know, how you get a flour into a measuring cup depends on whether or not you spoon it in or whether you can sift the flour directly into the cup or whether you just scoop the flour right into the container and then level it off. Each of those methods is going to result in a different amount of flour. And I think if you want to be accurate, you have to weigh it. And recipes should give you a weight of flour to be accurate.
The other item was the thermometer.
Oh, yes, because I take the temperature of the room, I take the temperature of the flour, I take the temperature of the water, and I take the temperature of the finished kneading of the dough.
Well, along with that is you have a special rolling pin.
It's a special rolling pin. It's multicolored. It's made of many different colors of wood. And it was given to me years ago by my son. He found it at an art fair in Boston. And ever since I've gotten that pin, it's become my favorite, and I travel with it. I just take it with me everywhere I go.
Are there any other items that you think a baker must have?
Well, I think a really good scale. I think for bread baking, you should have an oven that you line with a bread baking stone or with quarry tiles. If you have two ovens, that's ideal because you can keep one oven for doing pizza and bread. It sounds very elitist, but and then another oven for just regular baking and for, you know, roasting and that sort of thing. But I think a baking stone is really excellent to have, and you don't have to have two ovens for that. You can buy a baking stone and then put it in one oven and then take it out when you're not using it.
So one of the key qualities I noticed, and I did mention precision and exactness, but you do pay a lot of attention to how you deal with all your ingredients.
It's important to respect your ingredients because they're going to give you your ultimate product, you know, the result that you're after. Bread making basically is very simple because you have flour, water, salt, and yeast. Those are your main ingredients. That's for like a baguette or a focaccia or a ciabatta, you know, any kinds of those, what I call classic breads. So you want to have a good quality flour. Powdered yeast, you know, the active dry or the instant yeast, I've not noticed any difference in terms of brands. So I would say just make sure you have a good quality flour.
What does that mean?
Well, look for a particular brand, you know, the brand names. Gold Medal is always good. King Arthur is always good also because they're very precise from batch to batch, the protein content, and when it's going to be very consistent. So if you are using King Arthur all-purpose or you're using King Arthur bread flour, you can count on the protein content as being very consistent. And you'll want to have a high protein content flour for bread, usually.
So respect and patience, perhaps?
Yeah, patience and be set for failure, too. But, you know, you can always eat the bread that you make. You know, it doesn't have to look like a perfect baguette. What if you, when transferring the baguette from where it's rising on a pastry cloth onto your baking board that you're going to slide it onto the hot tiles on, right? Let's say that the baguette gets bent somehow. Okay, it's bent. You will still bake it, and you will still have bread. Okay, and then over time, you will learn that not to bend the baguette the shaped baguette so that it will be straight. And then making the slashes in the baguette. Julia says it takes years to really perfect those. She's absolutely right, because, you know, the angle of the blade and how deep you cut into it and how fast you make the slash, it all adds up to the quality of the bread that you're going to get. But you're going to get bread.
Well, again, it's paying attention to your environment, temperatures, and the humidity.
Right. And you should have an oven thermometer. I don't think we mentioned that earlier, but you should have an oven thermometer to make sure that your oven temperature is correct.
Well, thanks for your patience this weekend and giving my husband an incredible baking experience.
It was so much fun for me, too, because I always learn when I'm either working with myself or working with Joe. I learned a lot this weekend myself, so it was fun.
Well, thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
Many thanks to Greg and Dorothy Patton for hosting us in their Missoula home. Thanks to Greg for teaching Joe how to make bread, as Julia said, the way you dream it should be. A new scale and thermometer are now in our kitchen to bake perfect baguettes. This was an Extra Flavors Under the Big Sky. Next time, we will go to the Billings Food Bank, where we talk to Executive Chef David Mapplethorpe and Executive Director Cheryl Shandy. Much work goes into preparing Thanksgiving dinner for 5,000 and then packaging food items for families around Billings. Learn how the community and volunteers provide much to be thankful for. Join us the third Monday night at 6:30. Much gratitude to Jamie Granzella, who provided invaluable production assistance with this show. Theme music is by Parker Brown. For more information about this Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region, go to ypradio.org. I'm Stella Fong. Thank you.